CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor with Simon Constable, who writes for Forbes and Barron's and the Wall Street Journal and other distinguished publications. He's just arrived home in Edinburgh, Scotland, to turmoil in all directions. Winter is coming and a shortage of natural gas, or spiking prices of natural gas that are leading to calculations that are complicated but have to do with food and with heat and with subsidies. However, the pandemic didn't leave as the winter crisis entered. The pandemic is still with us. So Simon's driven from the south of France, where he enjoyed the sunshine and the French people and the food, of course. And now he's home in Edinburgh. But in the course of those travels, this is Simon's driving adventure, we learn a deal about how the pandemic is working its way through the governances of three countries: France, Britain, England, and Scotland. Simon, how often were you tested on the drive home, and how did you document those tests and your vaccinations?
Yeah, this was a very interesting thing. So the first thing that had to happen is 2 days before setting off back from France to the ferry in Normandy, what was needed was a test, which a swab was poked up my nose and then tested, and that had to be documented, and I had to take that with me to the ferry to say I wasn't positive from COVID, and I also had to keep my documents on me that said I'd been vaccinated twice with the AstraZeneca vaccine. So that was pretty simple. Then before getting on the ferry, I also had to fill out a British government document that said I had ordered a test that would arrive at my home here in Edinburgh, and that I would take that after 2 days of arriving back. That would then be sent in, and if it was negative, no problem. And if it was positive, I'd have to self-isolate. As it happens, it was negative, so all was okay. So so basically twice was all that was needed. Now, what's very interesting here is these tests were the expensive PCR tests. For one, it's about £50. So that's about $70 for one. If you need more than one, it's obviously more than that. What the British government was doing at the time that I was traveling was deciding to make some changes for the autumn, for the fall. For England, the change will be that a cheaper test will be allowed. And so it will be something like £20, or, you know, that's about $27. But Scotland won't. So Scotland will remain having the expensive test, which will give people an incentive not to want to fly into Scotland because of the extra cost. So that's what's going on there. So you've got three countries, three different ways of doing it, and none of it makes a whole lot of sense to me.
And you've complied with the requirements. Do they contact you on your iPhone or by mail to tell you what you did or did not do correctly? Say you had filled out a form incorrectly. How do they knock on your door? Do they send you a message? You've got to call in.
They ask, can you be contacted by text or by phone? And of course I said yes. And they haven't contacted me, which is probably because I've been negative on everything. But yes, they will either, if you're self-isolating, which I wasn't, they would maybe come round, check whether you are actually at home or not. And that's something that could happen, especially if you test positive. There is also telephoning you and asking you where you are and texting you to say whether there's been a change in rules for you individually. So, you know, you must self-isolate now would be the sort of text you might get. Luckily, none of that happened to me, but it's a very serious document when you fill it in. It's like, look, you must do this. And when I got to England, the immigration service there were like, you must send these tests back, you know, 2 days after you get back, you know, into the country. And if you don't, you'll be in trouble. And so that's really, really serious. They take it very seriously. Now, luckily, we're a fairly obedient nation in the UK. So it's not that hard to tell people to do something and have them do it. Certainly I did.
The border crossings themselves, were they busy? Were they in turmoil? Were people coming and going with these documents and tests? Were there challenges? Did you see any disruption in the flow of traffic?
No disruption in the flow of traffic at all. Getting through immigration was easy, really easy. It was just show your passports, they look at you, see if your face matches. And then, you know, as I said, I tell you to take the test and send it in. Really very quick, very easy, not a big problem at all. I was pleasantly surprised, to be honest with you, because I thought it would be a nightmare. My anxiety was running high, of course, because there was document after document after document. So it was the COVID vaccine documents. There was the initial test from France, which was in French, which I still have. And then there was the document that said I was going to have a test when I got back home. So that was all making me anxious because I wasn't sure until I'd seen the immigration people whether I'd done it correctly. And who would be? I mean, you'd know, no one's ever done it before. So it was fascinating.
Finally, you're in Scotland, you're home. We got you home, and these rules will change again. And Scotland is still keen on being careful about the virus, especially because winter is coming and the virus prospers in wintertime. The nuclear submarines, they are at least in part built and based in Scotland. And my memory, and this is 40 years out of date, is that there's always been a faction or a sizable voice in Scotland objecting to nuclear-powered submarines, and especially the submarines that carry nuclear missiles. Is that still a prominent part of the conversation in Scotland, that these submarines are not welcome? Where is it?
It's on the west coast, on the Clyde, of a place called Faslane, which is Her Majesty's naval base, where at least some of the nuclear powered subs and nuclear weaponized subs go into dock. Now, they never all go into dock at once. They're mostly under the water, out across the oceans. But there is definitely an anti-nuclear movement, and certainly anti-nuclear power and anti-nuclear weapons movement in Scotland. And that will be a big thing to discuss between the Scottish government and the English government if Scotland does get independence. There is nowhere else that Britain keeps its nuclear subs or stations them. So that could be a major disruption to Britain's defense if the Scottish government decides to kick them out. I don't know how that gets resolved. It may be one of those things that they'll try to gloss over, but I think there could be a big fight coming up there.
In the meantime, winter is coming to be solved, and Simon will do us the favor of attending a demonstration in all the major Scottish cities in these next days, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Stirling, Ullapool, and 700 events, a strike against global warming and for climate change legislation in Scotland, a keen country that lives its history right now. Simon Constable, Forbes, Barron's, The Wall Street Journal, other distinguished publications, arrived home safely in Edinburgh. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.